Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 168 of the Brown County Hour. This is Sarah Lytle.
And Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew. This month, our musical guests are John Boyer and Jamie Hood, also known as the Hammer and the Hatchet. They've recently released a recording that's a bit of a departure for them. Their new album features a full band, and we'll be listening to three selections from Here We Are.
We'll share a conversation with Amanda Mathis Wallace and Kimoy Bennett from the Brown County Art Gallery. We have another edition of Stoveside Surveys with Rick Albertson. Deb Bowden shares a St. Patrick's Day story, and we have essays from Jeff Tryon, Jim Eagleman, and Dave Seastrom.
In our first segment, we have an essay from Jim Eagleman about birthing time on the sheep farm when he was growing up. But first, we'll listen to our interview with The Hammer and the Hatchet that was recorded on location at the Buskirk Chumley Theater right before their performance at the WFHB Benefit Concert on January 31st. This includes their new song, the title track, Here We Are.
Okay, this is Rick Fettig, and I'm from the Brown County Hour on WFHB, and I'm here at the Buskirk Chumley with Hammer and the Hatchet.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I'm John Boyer and Jamie Hood. So thank you all for being here, and we appreciate what you've done with yourselves. I think we had one of your first interviews on our show when you guys first teamed up.
So
I think that was about 10 years ago.
Reference that number and people could go back and listen to history.
That's right.
So, this is a pretty big event. Why don't you give us a couple comments on that?
Well, we're really excited to be here to support WFHB 91.3. You know, music's for everyone, or radio's for everyone, or community radio, and this benefit for this today, you know, for WFHB. We're glad to be here, glad to be part of it. They've been real supportive of us, and really glad to give back a little bit to them.
How has WFHB influenced you guys, and what do you think it's done for the community?
Well, first of all, it's volunteer-powered. So because of that, there's a lot of different factions of the community that love to come out and support events for WFHB, and they support all kinds of different musicians, you know,
like exactly
every different genre, you know, that we could come up with here in this crazy town. Whatever we can throw at them, they find a place for us original musicians.
And yeah, here in this IU city, we got a lot of different variety of music too.
It was really fun. The other day I was in the station helping do some remodel on the studio with Tim Baker, and it was really nice just to hear a day's worth of programming while we were actually in there seeing everybody, the hustle and bustle of the station and
changing and chairs and all
always different. You know, I love that it's not just one genre, and it's everything. And
all right, inclusive. Well, you guys have been spending a lot of time on the road here lately from what I gather, so you want to talk about some places you've been? Or
we stay busy kind of because we get to do two things, the duo that we started with, and we still love to play as an acoustic duo, but also we've been able to spread our wings a little bit and try to book some full band shows in support of this new record that
got
we just
some help these days too.
We do
that.
We do. So we went to Echo Park and got to record a full band record last spring.
So is that where you did your CD?
Yes. This album that we're here to play today at Buskirk.
I helped on that place when it began.
Yeah,
I did really a bunch of the acoustic treatment.
But it's really great to have been able to record in a studio with that, with so much Bloomington history, you know, because, you know, a lot of people identify us with Brown County, Little Nashville, which is totally fine. We love the region and we spend a lot of time there. That's usually where we're at hanging out. But, you know, we live on the county line, so we love supporting Monroe County and being a part of it. It's over here.
Yeah, both kind of geographically and musically, we straddle that line.
It's nice to have that quality of a facility around here. And there's more than that quality.
Sure.
There's a lot of really great studios around here.
We have gotten to travel. We got to play in Michigan. We've been playing in Illinois, Ohio, Kentucky. We played down in, we had our first gig in Nashville, Tennessee this year, which is exactly how I figured it might be, overrated. But it was really fun. We had a great time. We play in Arkansas. We've played in Missouri. Wow. So we're trying to, you know, stretch to the west a little bit this year. And we're excited about our schedule as it comes together.
Yeah. Maybe looking to get into West Virginia and down that way this year.
You've got this new CD. Why don't we hear one of the songs? And then you can tell us a little bit about the show.
Right.
So which song are we going to hear?
Well, we decided to feature a song called Here We Are. It's the title track on our record. And it was written about the beginning of our relationship and on through here, because it's about persevering. You know, we've stuck to it with both our relationship, playing music together. That's not always easy, being creative partners and life partners. But
it's really hard to deal with my emitting positive attitude all the time.
Yeah.
You're perfect. I don't know what you're talking about.
Kind of a roller coaster.
Anyway, this song, Here We Are, has a refrain. We stuck to it. We got through it. Here we are. So
okay, here we go.
It is. Let it be all.
it's true. Dancing in the kitchen.
So we've just heard, Here We Are, the title track. Tell us a little bit about how and what are some of the songs and the heart behind it. Is there a theme?
Well, I mean, okay, so people need to realize, firstly, that this is a band album. So there's electric guitar on it and drums and bass. So it's a little bit more, it's a little louder than our normal albums. You know, usually we're a duet. We've been a duet this whole time, but yeah, it felt so good to plug in and be a little louder right now and just make a little bit more noise than normal. And we're glad to bring these songs to you in this sort of way. There's story songs still in them about some of our local favorite people that have mean the world to us, to mental health songs. You know, there's a little deeper content when it comes to that sort
of thing. Okay, yeah, I like that kind of stuff.
And we're both farm kids, so you'll hear that in our writing. We're both, you know, Midwestern, born and raised right here.
Struggles Hoosiers. Of being a farmer, being a Hoosier, yeah.
And it's nice to have the variety, and mm-hmm. now you got something with a little more energy in it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
we circled back and reimagined a few songs, and then there's still several new tracks on
there. I think John and you used to be a rock player.
A lot of punk rock and everything, And then, you know, rolling in the bluegrass, so it's like that energy really translates. But then,
that's when you found
that's when I found Jamie. And then songwriting, you know, blending, you know the difference, like you hear songwriters like Guy Clark or John Prine and all that, but, you know, it's good to tie all that stuff together.
Yeah, it is.
In the one album.
We're really enjoying putting this band together with no holes barred. You know, we played a bunch of live shows and got our personnel straight and got our sound straight and went into the studio. And we're really proud of the work that we were able to do with Andy Berge. I want to make sure we mention Tim Baker is on bass and Isaac Carter is on drums.
Yeah, we're glad to be here supporting WFHB and Brown County Radio Hour. You all have been such wonderful people and family to us. We've always love coming in and hanging out with you guys and talking about what we're up to. We're going to be hitting the road. We're booking now for the season, so it always hit us up if you have something you'd like to see us at. Just shoot us a message.
Like I said, we always love having you and appreciate what you're doing for yourselves and for bringing attention to our community and how you're just blessing the rest of the world.
Well, we really hope that even more and more musicians from our community recognize that if they put their full weight behind their art, then there's a place for it. Yeah, and there's a lot of good places for it, but WFHB is a great start.
There's more than just home base.
That's right.
That's right.
So if people want to keep a little bit closer contact with you, how do they... how would they do that? Websites and...
You can listen to our music wherever you listen to music.
And you can find us online at thehammerandthehatchet.com. And, from there you can find us all over YouTube and, of course, on all the social media links. But
I do want
to
also
check out that website.
On WFHB's website, you can find some of the live shows we've done in studio.
Oh, awesome.
That's right.
Awesome. That'll be great. Well, we've been speaking with the Hammer and the Hatchet, John and Jamie, for the Brown County Hour and WFHB. So thank you all for being here and enjoy your company. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us here.
Glad to be here.
This is Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings. Growing up on a farm as a kid taught me a lot of lessons. I say grew up on a farm, but that's not exactly true. We had the farm, my dad's hobby, that was located about 2 miles from our home in the hilly part of southeast Pennsylvania. He was the county vet, and the farm was his place reminiscent of his youth. To him, it was a respite and place for him to do all things agricultural. To me, it was a place I was constantly put to work. Winter was my favorite time. Winter on the farm, though, was not easy. Deep snow and frequent blizzards, I recall, made it difficult to simply move around. And on the farm, with our herd of Hampshire sheep, at one time about 350 head, or for that matter, any livestock, it's just more work to feed, water, and care for animals. I remember at the onset of the first storm, we were already making preparations for lambing. With pens and heat lamps, extension cords, and water buckets supplied in the main part of the barn, it was transformed from a wide-open strawed floor to individual 6x6 pens, where pregnant ewes were kept until the lambs were born. And for each winter, it was my job to stuff burlap bags into the drafty corners of the barn to ward off the chill. And as temperatures rose inside the barn from both the animals and the heat lamps, it seemed cozy, but I don't recall the thermometer ever getting about 20 degrees. I thought, what a strange time for a young animal to be born. Those fragile little lambs with penetrating cold and snow nearly every day. Not knowing anything about the sheep and their reproductive cycles, I just took it for granted this is what happens. Come winter, lambs are born. I was on the hand to help at this crucial time, so was my mom and my sister. We spent many days and nights monitoring the birthing and were ready with towels, heated milk in pop bottles with rubber nipples to begin the feeding. One night as I huddled under the heat lamp, waiting for a lamb to be born, I finished my arithmetic homework due the next day. And I just stuffed my paper back into the book as the lamb gushed out. It got a bit messy and I wiped off the page to hand in the next day and explained the blood was from the newborn lamb. My teacher seemed to understand, this not being all that unusual. I suspected other students did their homework while tending to farm animals. When a young lamb is born, it looks pretty disgusting. And if you weren't right there to begin rubbing the poor animal to basically start it living, it might simply die. My dad yelled at us to rub and rub and rub it when he saw another lamb in our hands, so that's what we did. And within a few minutes, this jerky little lamb with spindly legs and knobby head seemed to actually come alive. It was like you had this power to cause an animal to live. If you rubbed it with a warm towel, wiped its head and eyes right off the kinky black wool, you had a living little sheep in your hands. The mother seemed to take a bit of an interest in it, and while you fed it with the warm milk, you slowly transferred it from bottle to the mother's teat. Nursing and warm under the lamp, things looked better. Another sheep born to an already large flock, I thought. And as we drove home, knowing we did some good, I knew we'd be back the next day. I suppose this was my first lesson, that if you didn't take absolute responsibility and care for farm animals every day, all season long, all year long, you didn't have much to make a life. Your reputation as a farmer might suffer. But more importantly, you didn't have a herd or a flock from which to make a living. And that was the reason to own animals, to make a living. In the second lesson learned quite early, farm animals were not pets. So don't get too close to them, my dad would say. It made it easier when it came time to ship them off to market. A young little ram I had as a 4-H project that I groomed and showed at the county fair taught me to see it as a breeding part of the flock and not different from any other animal we owned and certainly not a pet. So when I went hunting with my dad for rabbits and quail and pheasants on the farm, I learned they were quite different from the farm animals that needed daily care. They lived on their own, wild and all year, with no help from anyone. And particularly in winter, when severe conditions prevailed, how did they live? How could this be? I wondered. And that soon began for me, slowly and with a lot of questions, of course, an understanding that helped me learn a difference. I saw when some rabbits froze, and a covey of quail was raided by a fox, no amount of rubbing with a towel would bring them back to life, like with the lambs. Deer were hunted for meat by farmers who needed to feed the family. Hawks and owls and snakes were not the enemy, my dad told me, but a way to keep wild animals, many of them young, in check, like hunting. Many didn't make it through the winter, so removal of the surplus was another lesson. These were lessons learned firsthand in an environment where I saw birth and death of all kinds of animals as pretty much a regular event. Not hardened by the tragedy, cruelty, or suffering, rather the reality. It had taught me, by loving parents, certain lessons, and they probably learned it the way I did and were taught by their parents. Lessons learned every day, passed along and helpful to a young boy learning about life. Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings, the Brown County Hour. Talk with you next time.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from R. Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, Deb Bowden brings us a story about a leprechaun in her yard in a nod to St. Patrick's Day. We'll close the segment with the Hammer and the Hatchet song, Big Yellow Plow. But first, we have an interview with Amanda Mathis Wallace and Kim Oy Bennett as they take us on a tour of the Brown County Art Gallery in celebration of their centennial anniversary and share some information about upcoming events.
Hi, this is Lucy Schultz on WFHB. We're here at the Brown County Art Gallery, and I'm here with
Amanda Mathis
and Kim Oy Bennett.
So we're going to go on a walkthrough real quick. Let's do that. Let's go for a walkthrough. And you're going to show us around this wonderful Brown County Art Gallery. And I think that we're actually going to see some guests out here.
We have a few
Brown County people. And it looks like some other people. And Kim Oy, you were going to show me what?
Well, I'll let Amanda talk about the association room. No?
Yes. We are required 4 times a year to switch out. So we have, new things to see always in the association.
We're always changing the gallery.
Okay.
Every time people come in, they're like, okay, what's new? And we're like, okay.
Yeah, we change
out each room constantly, except our bombing room that just stays the same.
But okay. Other than that. Yes, very nice. And I love the ambiance with just kind of light music and the people are just milling around and looking at all the art. It's very nice.
Yes.
And I grew up here doing art classes and showing my art here also.
So this is great.
Full circle, right?
Yeah. And then starting about art classes, we have art classes in June and July, which we already have people signed up for.
And that's nice. Our children's art camp.
Yeah.
Will be June and July. And we're already getting kids signed up for that too.
That's great.
So I'm excited for that too.
These are all association artists. We have over 40 plus members that hang here. This is our Henshaw room. This is part of our permanent collection. And we change this room frequently also. So unless we have a special exhibit, Henshaw stays in this room.
By the vault.
Yes. We take very good care of our artwork. And we could go.
It's just incredible.
Through here.
Yeah, let's do.
So this is our Gustav Bauman collection.
Okay.
This is our Robert Sexton Gallery. That's the gentleman talking on the TV right there.
Okay.
He is a Bauman expert and collector. If there's anything about Gustav that you need to know, you can always call us and ask. We'll find out for you.
Wonderful.
And if you notice on the wall, if you if anyone come and have never experienced printmaking before, you know, the process, that wall will explain it, the progression.
Oh.
And it just simplifies everything and explain the process. Mm. We have a lot of his, all his Brown County work is in this room, and along with his original wood blocks.
Oh, wow.
All his.
Oh, these are incredible. I don't even want to touch them.
I know.
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
By the way, don't touch art, by the way. Never.
Yes.
Okay.
And TC Steel was really the reason why Gustav came here talking about TC Steel. We do have his exhibit in July also. It's going to be one of the biggest TC Steel exhibition since its 100 year. And it will be here at the gallery.
Fantastic.
And but he was very good friends with TC Steel, and TC Steel, like, he told a lot of artists to come to Brown County, but he, you know, was the main reason why Gustav came here.
Oh, no kidding.
Encourage him. Hey, you should, you know, enter your artwork.
Yeah.
And then he's like,
come join our community.
Look what's happening. And that, if you go to the TC Steel home, that is by the fireplace. Gustav did that. So.
Yeah. Wow.
A lot of history. Brown
Lots
County
of history.
So full of history.
Yeah.
Like, we could go on. Okay. And then these are just all our permanent collection that is out right now.
Okay.
And we change those. If you notice, you go through, there's a lot of TVs and historic facts and programs going on. So it's not just visual. It's, you know, you can also listen and learn a lot.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like a museum, really. Well, it's a museum / gallery.
Yeah. So we're actually here in a special room where you teach classes, Amanda.
Yes, I do. And I'm setting up the classroom for our first session of Make Art, Make Friends. I believe I have 19 students.
And you're fully booked.
I'm fully booked.
Goodness.
Yep, we have a waiting list. We have a late. It, 4 months. 4 months of classes. Definitely this month, I know, is booked. But don't hesitate to call the gallery to find out about April or May.
Okay. Right here, we have a wall in front of us.
That is a special wall for the artists celebrating their 100-year anniversary. They would pick one of the founding artists that started the Brown County Art Gallery Association and recreate one of their masterpieces. And so they did a rendition of one of their favorite work or artists. And so these paintings on this wall, these were all donated by the association artists.
Wonderful.
And they are for sale.
And I see there are just one of them has a red dot, and it's the A.W. Mathis one. and that is what you go by, A.W. Mathis.
A.W. Mathis with my paintings, yes.
So and the red dot means what?
It sold.
Woo!
I know. I was really very pleased. And it's going to a Brown County person.
Nice.
So that makes me happy, too.
Yes.
And the person also collects a lot of Brown County art. So again, you can see I'm beaming because it makes me very happy.
Absolutely.
And as Kamoy said, the proceeds will go to the association to put on some of the special projects, exhibitions, and things that we have happening this year to celebrate the 100 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually discussed the 100-year anniversary in a prior Brown County Hour episode.
Uh-huh.
And I know, Kimoy, I know you have a lot of things you want to talk about.
Oh, my gosh. We have so much
that we are doing this year that is so exciting for our community. Please give us everything that's going on.
I'll give you a quick rundown because there's a lot. So right now we have our permanent collection up, and they went ahead and picked out from our permanent collection a lot of the works that are not frequently on display, like not the popular artwork. So we invite everyone to come down and look at these artwork. I mean, they're part of our history. These are people that make Brown County what it is today and make it so such an artist colony that it is. So just come down and see what we have up. And as Amanda mentioned, we're starting our Make Art Make Friends. We are fully booked. We have a lot of new people that's coming. We also have a lot of people that have taken the class previously. So we welcome our family group back. We have a lot of fun. And then we have, in March, we have this student art competition coming up. So far, I have 23 schools that will be doing that. So it's a really big deal. Of course, Brown County Middle School and High School also.
Yep.
And then after that, we have our Centennial Tea. Now, this tea, each year before COVID, we used to have a Victorian tea. So you come, there's a performance, there's prizes, and it is very decked out. The committee do a wonderful job setting up our main gallery, and it's reservation only, so you have to call to make a reservation. This tea, it's been going on for over 30 years. It'll be in April. We're filling up fast on that, so call us if you would love to do that. It's the last year for the tea. Come well dressed with your best hat. I mean, if you want to, but you know, we do like to go fancy here. And it's just a wonderful time. And there's more information online about all these events. So people can always look on our website, on our Facebook, or just call us and ask. That's always a good option.
What is your website?
It's browncountyartgallery.org. Or our Facebook page. It's the Historic Brown County Art Gallery.
Okay. This is Lucy Schultz on WFHB, and I've been here with
Kimoy Bennett.
Amanda Mathis.
Bye, Brown County.
Bye. See you soon.
Come see us.
I'm used to seeing little ghost kitties wandering around my house. A couple came with me when I moved from Bryson Lane to Greasy Creek back in 2019. One long-haired white cat played on my stairs and on the second floor when I previously lived on that hill. I wasn't surprised to find his owner living temporarily there, too. He was a friendly fellow and loved his pet. They later moved on, and I no longer saw either of them again. But recently at my new house, I keep spotting someone flitting among the tulip poplars in my backyard. There's a cemetery next door, but no ghosts have ever wandered over because of the bells on my doors. So I was a bit curious. When I got a good look, the person appeared to be a man slightly shorter than 5 foot. He was wearing a homespun shirt under a vest. The sleeves were rolled up several times. He wore a cap, which sometimes I saw him holding in his hand. His pants were baggy and belted with a thick cord. I saw no socks, and his shoes had seen better days. His clothes were different shades of brown, and he appeared somewhat faded and worn also, as if he'd had a hard life. Sometimes he appeared to blend in with the tree bark and dry grasses lining the gully. Other times he stood right out in the yard. Only once did I see any other color except brown. It was a green ribbon attached to his cap. This past week I saw him sitting on a tree stump. He appeared to be watching something and smiling. Always before, he appeared sad. Then I saw. It was a little brown and gray striped ghost kitty which had followed me from Bryson. It spent most of its several years peeping around the corner leading to my office. It always appeared shy and would scamper back if it caught me looking at it, but it wasn't shy of retiring today. It romped around that little man out in my yard. It was full of excited energy, and the odd fellow laughed at its antics. He pulled a meerschaum pipe from his pocket and began smoking. I saw the smoke rising from that pipe and smell scented tobacco drifting in my direction. Then he picked up the cat and put it on his shoulders. He walked toward the biggest tree in my yard and put his hand on the wide trunk. He turned toward me, and I heard him call out, "Thank you, Mary Patrick, for caring for me wee lost kitty. Ian said he and Blarney rested at your hill house, and I might find my fin with you. The trees whispered your whereabouts. Without your Irish blood, you dinna be seeing me. Oh, that skeleton on your front porch, dressed like a leprechaun, gave me a good laugh. Luck of the Irish to ye. We'll be keeping a kind eye toward ye from now on, and a wee spot of milk would be appreciated occasionally." Then he turned toward that tree, bent down, and walked through a small doorway. I realized that I'd just spotted one of the little people from my Irish ancestors. That's what they called them. Ian and Blarney were the two ghosts I'd met in my old house. At least I thought they were ghosts, but they weren't. They had allowed me to partially see them. I guess they figured a ghost-like appearance would be less scary than an actual man and cat staying upstairs. I'm going to miss little Finn peeking at me or rubbing against my legs, but I'm happy he found his owner. And since I don't want to upset one of the wee folk, I'll make sure to put out a small bowl of milk at least once a month to ensure that that leprechaun stays pleased with me. I know the wrath can be terrible, so I won't forget his request. And I'm very glad he liked my skeleton, too.
Tracks all shining in the sun. When tomorrow comes and your engine's ready to run, won't you bury me right along? Big yellow plow with your freshly oiled gears, sitting there waiting in my field. When tomorrow such pride, I remember helping Grandpa pick up stones. Now there's not enough money or time to save our family farm. Big yellow plow, there's not much left.
We pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn. located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our final segment, humorist Jeff Tryon ponders his love-hate relationship with the five-letter word game, Wordle. And we feature the Hammer and the Hatchet song, Catalpa. But first, we begin segment three with a poetry feature. The author of the photo book, Brown County Folks, Rick Albertson, shares meditations from his new book, Stoveside Surveys. Each episode has a companion photo you can view on our website. And Rick starts each Stoveside Survey with a description of that photo.
Looking at a photo of two hand-carved walking sticks. We stand here, we've been stood here, so unnaturally for this silly photo. We are 38 years old. It seems like just yesterday when the boys carved us. They found us lying forlorn on the forest floor, so desirous to be picked up, to become useful once again, yet unable to do more than wish it so. Yet they did. And they carved us, first slicing off the little parasitic snippets of branches growing from our limbs, stripping our disintegrating bark, carefully dissecting our dead cambrium cells, scraping our sapwood smooth, their knives, scalpels wielded by the young, ambitious wood surgeons. We were reborn. They gave us new life. We became walking sticks. Why us? Thousands of our dead friends, branches scattered, lay everywhere. Well, yes, they did walk by us, but why did they pick up you? Why me? A predetermined episode of evolutionary biology? Oh, how days begin. One never knows what may come. The dawning sun drying the cold, thick dew enveloping us. Perhaps in its role to bring warmth to our forest yet one more day, the sunlight knew, its penetrating rays preparing us for the boys. It was so exciting. In death, we had new meaning. We would serve them well. And we did. We provided stability, helping them balance on the slippery, uneven terrain of the Smoky Mountains. We unknowingly, to them, reduced the stress on their knees and hips as they scrambled up and down rocky shorelines. We marshaled their limbs into formations of good posture. We became essential aids in self-defense, fighting off many an imaginary foe, even each other. They've taken us to so many, many places. Older now, forgotten by them, yet cherished by their father. A reminder of the glory of youth realized in the out-of-doors. So thankful is he for their having grown up naturally in nature.
Screw that Wordle. It's 11:30 at night, and you're all safely ensconced in your bed, happily waiting for Mr. Sandman to make his inevitable appearance. It's a Sunday, and you've had a busy day. Church, of course, and then dinner out, an afternoon visit with family, a rousing good TV show on the sofa with the wife. A full day. But then, suddenly, you remember. The Wordle. Oh, crap. And all the activity and entertainment and good times, you have somehow neglected to do the Wordle, an addictive interactive game published online by the New York Times. I should say fiendishly published by the New York Times, because this thing has got a way of getting a grip on you and never letting go, like a mental tick. Obsession is an ugly word, but no uglier than the thing it denotes. When you find yourself crouching by your bedside in the dark, face aglow from your cell phone, desperately trying to think of a word that has only one vowel and definitely has a CH or an SH or maybe a PH in it, you will know how I feel. Thing is, you tend to share this addiction with your loved ones, your spouse, or maybe your siblings, possibly nieces or nephews, so that there will inevitably be someone who asks in the sweetest possible way, "Did you do the Wordle today?" Grrr, did I do the Wordle? Let me tell you something about that freaking Wordle. It's nothing but an evil plot to drive us insane from the inside. get control of our minds and keep us constantly frustrated by making us think we don't know enough about anything when we already knew that anyway. Screw that Wordle. The heck with it. The game keeps track of your streak, how many days in a row you have successfully figured out a random five-letter word, and as the streak grows, you become more and more obsessed with keeping it alive. My niece posted on social media her deep anger and disgust after her 100-plus day streak of successfully solving the Wordle was brought to a devastating screeching halt by the word parer. Parer. P-A-R-E-R. What the heck is a parer? Is that really even a word? Well, of course it is, because computers know everything and so forth. A parer is the word that we normal English-speaking human beings would call a paring knife. But I've been around kitchens a lot, and I've never in my life ever heard it called a parer or even heard the word parer. Gonna have to call BS on that one. Gonna have to throw a flag. Unnecessary obtuseness. 15 yards. Now I'm gonna let you in on a little secret here. There's an evil genius behind this Wordle plot, and so there's undoubtedly some sort of overall nefarious plan. Though designed by Josh Wordle, the game Wordle is owned and propagated by the New York Times, and that should have been my first clue. You see, once upon a time, many moons ago, I got to thinking that maybe I should take up the hobby of working crossword puzzles. I mean, I'm a word person, right? I love words. So I got a book of New York Times crossword puzzles and a package of yellow number 2 pencils and set in to entertain myself. But the clues, those terrible, horrible crossword clues. You'd finally break down and look it up and then throwing the book at the wall in disgust scream, really? Really? It was that? For example, the clue, it might turn into a different story. The solution, spiral staircase. Ah! Who comes up with this stuff? Well, it turns out that it isn't just random and it's not an accident either. It's not a computer. There's an evil genius behind the New York Times crossword puzzle, and his name is Will Shortz. He's a dangerous person who should be carefully watched. Shortz graduated from Indiana University by simply making up his own curriculum through IU's individualized major program. Why didn't I think of that? He's the only person known to hold a college degree in enigmatology or the study of puzzles. Shortz eventually weaseled his way into the top echelon of American puzzle making, the dreaded New York Times crossword, where he began a campaign of quietly driving everyone insane with stupid, stupid clues. Now the whole conspiracy starts to become clear to me. Wordle may have invented it, but Shortz is the dark power behind driving us all bat poop crazy with this insidious daily word puzzle. I don't need it. Sure, I like it. Some days more than others, but I don't need it. You hear me, Shortz? Can you hear me, Josh Wordle? I don't have to do it today. I can get along perfectly fine without doing that freaking Wordle. If my wife asks, oh, so sweetly, did you get the Wordle today? I will tell her point blank, no. No, I did not do the Wordle today. I don't have to, and I'm not going to. I may not do it tomorrow either. Screw that Wordle.
Some winters seem longer than others. And so far, this one has seemed longer than most. For many of us, dreams of gardening give us something to look forward to, and there's nothing like leafing through the abundance of seed catalogs that have been arriving in the mail since before Christmas to inspire those dreams. There's a practical side of gardening, and there's a fantasy side. On the practical side, the size of your garden determines how much of what you can grow. Another factor in that regard is how much work you are willing and able to do. As I've aged, the size and scope of my garden has continued to decrease. Conversely, my interest in patronage and local farmers' markets has increased. In other words, these days, if I'm not growing a particular garden goodie, I can purchase it from someone who is. As fellow gardeners, I always enjoy the conversations we have in the market, and we often swap information about the varieties of fruits and vegetables and the different ways of growing them. Younger farmers' market vendors are dreamers, and it wasn't so long ago that I was one of them. Actually, there were no local farmers' markets when I started raising a garden 50 years ago, but if there had been, I'm sure I would have been involved. Back to practicality. It's important to consider what you grow and why. Gardeners are full of opinions, and in mine, growing certain crops aren't worth the effort. Potatoes come to mind. As much as we love to eat them, the amount of work they take to grow and the fact that they can be purchased so inexpensively puts them in the "it's better to buy them than grow them" category. Sweet corn is another perfectly wonderful crop to grow. The only problem we have with that crop is we never get any. Yep, the plants thrive in our area. The soils are perfect for the development, and we can produce abundant ears of the finest corn imaginable. But here's the thing. As the corn matures and the closer it gets to ripeness, the more it puts out a distinctive sweet odor that alerts the raccoons who come in from everywhere to completely devour our crop the night before we're going to harvest it. The way commercial growers get around this fact is to grow way more than they hope to harvest. In other words, if they get 60% of the crop, they can make some money. Growing enough sweet corn to produce a crop is a luxury that most small gardeners can't afford. I'm all for helping the raccoons out, but mine are so greedy they don't leave me any, so it's not worth the effort. Growing melons is on the cusp. A few cantaloupes can be grown. But for the same reason, you have to put a cage around them or the raccoons and the possums will get there first. I have never successfully grown a watermelon. And I suspect that those who do grow them in large numbers for the same reason the corn growers do. As to the fantasy side of gardening, here is where dreams come to life and trying something that you've never grown before is fun and exciting. In my way of looking at it, why grow something you can easily get at the grocery store or even a farmer's market? The work and time commitment is the same for regular old something or other as it is for something exotic and special, so why not take a walk on the wild side? Of all the crops I grow, I have a particular fondness for tomatoes. There are hundreds of varieties that come in all shapes and sizes and flavors. Like most gardeners, I have a few favorites I always grow, and perhaps Brandywine or Big Boy tops the list. But there's so many that I haven't tried that this year I've decided to do something about it. Rather than grow a crop of tomatoes that includes many of the same types, I'm going to grow a collection of different varieties. So far, I've purchased at least 14 different tomato, mostly heirloom types, that I have never grown before. In the way of gardening, some will flourish and some will be only so-so, but I bet they'll all be tasty. A few years ago, I invested in a set of grow lights. We have a dandy setup that allows us to grow an abundance of flowers and vegetables from seed. It will be March when this show is aired, and soon after that month begins, the seed trays will be full of baby plants, and they will be growing under the lights and becoming stronger every day. This is a most wonderful sight that brings a smile and inspires hope that before long, spring will come, and soon that first homegrown tomato will be served up in all its glory. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
Sometimes I get so seems control it all. I get so tired of fending off those demons. You're the kid best of me. I gotta start all over. It's a brand new day. In a fever dream, through the dappled moon,
Thanks for tuning in to episode 168 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.